Hello and welcome back to another episode of People Pleaser. If this is the first time you're ever seeing an episode of People Pleaser and you're thinking, what the hell is that? What's he talking about? This is my podcast that I've been doing for over 5 years now. Yeah, I usually start it by saying from a Blankenfort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser, but I'm not in my Blankenfort recording studio in my little one-bedroom apartment. I'm in a hotel room in Salt Lake City where I am currently shooting a movie for the next few weeks. So, yeah, here we are. I thought it would be interesting to have a conversation about America's problem with greed, and obviously not just America's problem, it's a humanity problem, really, the sickness and poison and toxin of greed. Obviously, in the wake of Brian Thompson's death, there's a lot of people talking about this topic. There's a lot of people talking about, like, what kind of evil is greed anyway? Obviously, it's one of the seven deadly sins, but like, how bad is it? How bad is it to just want a little bit of money? Does that actually make you that bad of a person if you just want a little bit of money? Shouldn't we all be allowed to try to get money? And isn't it, I mean, we're all doing that anyway, right? Like, we all live in capitalism. We all got bills to pay. Stuff is expensive. Shouldn't we all be able to get money and get paid if we can? And like, yeah, absolutely. And this isn't me just saying, like, you know, like wanting money at all is bad, but like, I do think that that there is a difference between needing to pay bills and getting enough money to pay your bills and wanting to just have so much more money than any one person could ever possibly use in a single lifetime. I'm going to talk about my thoughts on the Brian Thompson thing, but before I do that, I'm going to sort of get to it in a weird, I'm going to take a weird circuitous path to getting there. The first thing that made me want to talk about this, before Brian Thompson even died, before that even happened, I was on Threads and somebody posted the following. I'm just going to read it to you. This person, who has the username Serve Knowledge, I don't really know what that means, wrote, "Making $1.5 million in California, here's how it breaks down after taxes. Federal tax is $513,164, state tax $184,557, Social Security $9,114, Medicare $33,450, state disability $1,602, total tax $741,886, net income $758,114, effective tax rate 49.5%. California's tax reality is no joke. What are your thoughts?" Obviously, the person who posted this was like being intentionally vague. They weren't actually saying where they stand on the issue, but it does seem, it has the vibes of someone who's saying this is a problem, that it's a problem that California is taxing close to 50%, saying like California's tax reality is no joke, but I don't know. What are your thoughts? Do you think that that's reasonable? And I responded to this post by just saying, my thoughts are, if you're taking home $760K after taxes, you're doing incredibly well and should be living very, very comfortably. And that's just true. I live in California, and I know that if I were making $760,000 net, I'd be doing incredibly well. I would probably be able to afford to get into a home, and a nice one at that. I could drive a nicer car if I wanted to. I probably wouldn't want to. I like the car that I drive, but I could if I wanted to. I could go on vacation, you know, more times a year than I already do. And I could stay in nicer hotels, and I could eat at nicer restaurants, and I could bring people with me, and I could pay for them as well. $760,000 net, well invested, is you're going to be a millionaire, a multimillionaire within a few years. 3, 4, 5 years of that, you're going to be a multimillionaire if you know how to allocate those funds properly and invest them properly. That's a lot of money. But I posted this thinking like, this is a kind of not a controversial take. I got the vibe from the original poster that they had a problem with the idea of a 50% tax. But I was just, so that's why I was kind of cavalier in my response. Like, my thoughts are, it's fine. If you can comfortably afford to have $700,000 taken out of your income and not feel it, and you can still be doing incredibly well, then you should be taxed that highly. I think that California's tax code makes more sense than the tax code that we're seeing kind of across the board federally. And somebody who has since blocked me, I'm so bummed out that I didn't grab these screenshots before recording this, because this person blocked me. It was a follower of mine, said, you know, something to the effect of, and I remember it pretty well. So even though I didn't get the screenshots, I can do a pretty solid impression of what they said. This person was like, Austin, I usually agree with you, but you're way off the mark here. 50% is completely unreasonable. I don't care what you're making. A 50% tax is insane. If I'm making $1.5 million, I want my money. They said that. They were like, I want the money that I'm getting paid. I want my money. 50% is insane. So I responded kind of like I do, just kind of being tongue-in-cheek and being a little bit of a snarky little weenie boy. This is probably why I got blocked. I said, what I think is insane is being such a greedy maniac that you think making $1.5 million like isn't enough. Like, actually, you think making $760,000 net isn't enough, that you're such a greedy maniac that even though you're winning, like at that point, you are winning the game. You are light years ahead of so many other people who are actually struggling to pay rent and to afford groceries and to cover healthcare costs, to support their kids, their families, whatever. At $760,000, you can do it, and you can do it comfortably, and you can live well. And you're such a greedy maniac that you're pissed at the hypothetical reality, the hypothetical possibility of a future day where you're making $1.5 million that the government wouldn't let you take every single cent of that home with you. First of all, that's just not a reality no matter what you're making. Like, they're never going to let you take all of it, right? Like, you're always going to have to give up some of it. This person literally said, I want what I'm paid. I want my money. And it's like, well, they're always going to take some of it, right? There's no scenario where you're going to take home 1.5. But I almost wanted to say, like, cool, then figure out a way to make $3 million. If you want 1.5, figure out a way to make three, and then they'll take 1.5 away from your three, and then you'll be left with 1.5 net, and there you go. But of course, in that scenario, that guy would still think this is an outrage. 50% is insane. But, you know, I did my little snarky rebuttal, and he came back to me and said, where does it end, Austin? 60%? 70%? Why not just let the government take all of it? Why not just let them take the entire amount? Where does it end? Basically, before we get into Brian Thompson, I just want to go through why this guy was wrong and I'm right. So let's break that down, shall we? First of all, I just want to talk about, like, what are taxes? Like, what actually is a tax? What's happening when the government takes taxes out of your income? Because I think that the way that a lot of people conceptualize this transaction is different from how we conceptualize or think about other transactions that we make under capitalism. Because all this is a fee that the government is charging you for the privilege of living in their country and enjoying the amenities of their country. You might not think that the amenities are very nice. You might think that they could be doing a better job spending the money that they're taking from you, but that doesn't really matter. It's very similar to, like, your landlord taking money from you for rent. I pay my landlord over $20,000 a year to live in my little one-bedroom apartment, and I'm just one person in, like, a 10-unit building, and I know that the people who own my building, the company that owns my building, owns multiple rental unit buildings like that. So they're collecting, like, $22,000 a pop from all 10 of the units in my building. They're collecting, you know, well over $200,000 a year just from us, and then they're collecting from all of their other properties as well. I personally think I'm giving them too much money for what I'm getting. I personally think for the amount of money that I'm giving them, they should be giving me back more in return. I should be seeing more of that come back to me. I've never even met my landlord, and I've lived in my building for 6 years, and, like, every problem that's ever happened in my building, just to avoid having to deal with them, I just fix it myself, because I've never had a major problem that I couldn't fix. I just usually fix it myself. Bottom line is, what I'm saying is, the transaction just is the transaction. Like the rate is what it is. They charge what they charge and they take the money. And once I give them the money, it's not mine anymore. It's theirs. And they can spend it however they want to. And I can almost guarantee that they're probably going to spend it in ways that I ethically or even morally disagree with, that I don't think are right, that I wouldn't want my money to be spent, you know, like spent on things that I wouldn't want my money to go toward. I would rather that 90% of what I'm giving them in that over $20,000 a year would come back to me in the form of like better service and better upkeep on my place. And I don't know, they upgrade me to more rooms in my apartment, more space, but it doesn't come back to me. I give that money away to them and they do with it whatever they do with it. And that's just how the transaction works. That's how it always works. That's how it works when you buy a car. That's how it works with healthcare. It's like, you want to think that you're going to be guaranteed a direct return on whatever you're giving. Like, I paid you this much. I deserve at least this much in quality. But really, it's just like, it costs what it costs. Like, a lot of times a $5 shirt and a $20 shirt, there's not much difference between them. It's just like, what does that store think they can get away with charging you? And it's not like if you get a $20 shirt at one store and a $5 shirt at another store, you're getting $15 worth in more shirt. There's $15 more shirt at the other store. It's just that like, that's what that transaction's going to run you at that other store. And I think what I'm getting to here is that taxes, it's just a transaction. The government's just, they're just charging you a surcharge, a fee, a service charge for, that's how the government budget operates. That's how we pay politicians. That's how they make their money. That's how government, you know, that's how they fund projects. That's how, you know, construction projects get subsidized. And that's how low-income housing gets subsidized. That's how social programs get subsidized. That's how obviously the defense budget gets built, is through our taxes. That's how it works. Like, the government only exists and operates because they collect taxes. And people treat taxes in their brains like, hey, that's my money. That's my money. And I want to make sure that you're spending it in ways that I agree with. And if you're not, then I'm going to figure out ways to not have to give you that money anymore, or I'm going to fire you and replace you with someone else. And it's just sort of like, listen. It's not that I don't get that. It's not that I don't understand wanting your tax money to go toward things that you agree with. I obviously understand that. I obviously understand being frustrated with the way that the government is allocating the money that they are taking from you. I obviously understand feeling like, hey, if you're going to take that big of a percentage out of my yearly income, out of the money that I worked hard to earn, I want you to at least spend it in ways that are useful and productive. And I don't want to hear about you guys skimming off the top and embezzling and stealing money. I don't want to hear about billions of dollars from different budgets going missing every year. And I don't want to hear about the insanely bloated defense budget that we have that dwarfs any other developed country. I want to hear about this money actually going to people who need it and actually being used to help people if you're going to take it from me. So I totally understand having a beef with how the government goes about using tax money. But it still is like, at the end of the day, under capitalism, under the system that we live in, it's just a straight up transaction. We all bear collectively as a society and as citizens of this country, a societal tax burden. We all have to pay into it. We all have to pay into these taxes to benefit from various social programs. Again, you could say those programs should be better. They should operate better given the amount of money that they are taking from us, all of that. But whatever it is, if we want to benefit from them at all, if we want to have roads that work and, you know, national infrastructure that more or less works, we need to pay into it. If we want to be allowed to live here legally, if we want to be able to allowed to have a social security number, have healthcare, make income legally, we have to pay into taxes. It's just what we have to do. It's just like shit costs money. Like they're going to take money for shit. And that's just how it works. And if that's the case, if we all are collectively bearing this burden, then, you know, the philosophy behind progressive tax codes like California's tax code is just People who can more easily afford to bear a larger percentage of that burden should. What's happening in the at the federal level is people who make between like $20,000 and $70,000 a year are paying a higher percentage in taxes of their yearly income than Elon fucking Musk is, than Jeff Bezos is. And that's a huge problem. It's a huge ethical and moral problem. And it should disgust any person alive. Where people like this guy who blocked me, I wish he hadn't blocked me so I could talk about him directly and I could show you specifically what he was saying. But where he gets it wrong is he just thinks in his mind, 50% is just too high of a number. That's just too much money for the government to take from any one person. That's too high. That's unthinkable. That's insane. The problem is income is all relative, right? Like 50% from a person who makes $50,000 a year is way too much. It's an unconscionable amount of money for the government to take from that person. In fact, if that person just pays 10%, $5,000 out of the income, out of the net income of a person who pulls in $50,000 a year is a felt amount. They feel that money going out of their bank account. They feel the loss of $5,000. Elon Musk does not feel the loss of $1 billion. So it's really relative, right? I got into a conversation with another guy on Threads that was, this was separate, but this person talked about how he was, you know, we were talking about whether or not billionaires pay their fair share in tax. It started because somebody posted, if I pay 20 to 25% of my income in taxes, billionaires should at least pay the same, which of course I absolutely agree with. This person responded, the top 10% of earners typically contribute approximately 70% of all federal income taxes. In fact, the top 1% alone often pays over 40% of all federal income taxes. The U.S. operates on a progressive tax system where higher income earners pay a higher percentage of their income in taxes compared to lower income earners. If you ever saw a billionaire's tax bill, you'd be horrified. Stop perpetuating a blatant lie that you clearly can't comprehend. You pay so little in taxes that you're a joke. Yeah, so first of all, fuck this guy. Absolutely fuck the rap Jesus, a terrible person and terrible philosophy. Also, he's just wrong. This whole idea that we have a progressive federal tax code where higher income earners pay a higher percentage is just wrong. And it's in the fucking next thing that he writes. He writes, Elon paid $11 billion in taxes. What are you smoking, you dingus? Yeah, fuck this guy. I hate him so much. So I saw this and I responded, well, he made $95 billion, dingus, which means that after $11 billion, he's taking home $84 billion. Do you have any concept of how much money that is? Do you realize that if we taxed him 90%, he'd still take home over $9 billion, which is more than enough to never have to work for 30 lifetimes. God, you boot-licking morons suck so much. And boy, do they ever suck so much. So this person, first of all, comes out strong, really confident, saying billionaires pay that the highest earning tax bracket in America pays a higher percentage of their income than the lower earners do. Already, he's just wrong. He's got it flipped. This person, the person he's responding to, is talking about paying 20 to 25% of their income. He says Elon Musk paid $11 billion. Well, Elon Musk made $95 billion. $11 billion is not 20% of $95 billion. It's barely over 10%. All that person is saying in their original post is, shouldn't he at least pay the same percentage as me? Isn't that at least reasonable that he should at least pay the same percentage as me? But all this other guy sees is just the number. He's paying $11 billion. You're a joke. You could never pay $11 billion. He's paying more than you could pay in 50 lifetimes. You're a joke. The amount that you pay is a joke. And here's the thing is, like, I agree with the rap Jesus. It's actually fucking ridiculous for the government to come after me every year for like the $10,000 to $20,000 that they get out of me, whatever it might be on a given year, depending on what my deductions are that year. Like, it's ridiculous of them to come after all of us small fish and get a couple thousand here and a couple thousand there, to go after a person who's making $30,000 and be like, you owe us $3,000. We need that $3,000. When literally all of that tax burden, the entire operating budget that the government operates off of, could be supplemented and replaced if we just adequately taxed, if we actually adequately taxed the top earning tax bracket in the country. We could make it so that anybody earning $100,000 a year doesn't even need to pay taxes. We could literally, we could actually live in a country where we just say, yeah, you don't actually need to worry about it. We tax the highest earning tax bracket enough that we it's covered. Like, it's absolutely covered. And that's, so this person who disagreed with me about the $760K thing, saying, you know, 50% is insane. Getting back into why they're wrong and why I'm right. So the big problem here is, A, they fundamentally misunderstand just like what taxes are. They think that like they are entitled to be able to set their own price for that transaction, and then they are entitled to be able to say what the government needs to do with their money. It's not their money anymore. It's the government's money. It's not your money anymore. And you don't get to really actually say. You get to vote on things and vote on policies and vote in politicians who might have tax codes that reflect what you want them to reflect. But the other reason why they're wrong is they're falling into this slippery slope fallacy, right? It's like, well, if we allow them to do 50%, what's next? And the guy actually wrote this, and I would show it to you if he hadn't blocked me, but he actually wrote, what's next, Austin? 60%? 70%? Where does it end? 100%? So slippery slope fallacies, the reason why they're bad is because they're presenting a straw man argument that the other person is not making. I was not saying at any point in my interaction with this person, I think that I advocate 100% tax rate. I was not advocating for a 100% tax rate on billionaires. So he's arguing against a position that I don't have. I was arguing that anyone making over $1 million can comfortably afford a 50% tax rate. In fact, they can comfortably afford a 60 or a 70% tax rate. And certainly billionaires can afford a 60 or a 70 or an 80 or even a 90% tax rate. Even saying we should tax someone who makes $1 billion 90% is not the same as saying we should tax them 100%. And all this guy really sees is like that really high number. And he just goes, well, that's too much. That's too much money. That's insane. That's an insane amount of money. Not realizing that like, if we were to tax billionaires at a 90% rate, it would mean potentially, in the spirit of altruism and, you know, what's best for the greater good of society, that maybe people in the lowest earning tax bracket could actually catch a break. They could actually be able to do something with their money, and maybe they could actually start to get ahead, and maybe they could actually get above water a little bit and breathe, and they wouldn't have to worry so much about the cost of living and their overhead. It probably wouldn't help much, but it would help some, at least a little bit. But we, all this guy sees is like, it's just, it's unconscionable to think about taxing them that much. Now, I would never say tax them 100%, because no person, no matter what your income is, can afford a 100% tax rate, right? Like, no person can afford to have all of their income taken by the government. No matter how much you're making, no matter what your salary is, 100% means your net income is zero, and nobody can live off of $0. But can a billionaire, can someone who makes $1 billion a year afford a 90% tax rate, and can they do it comfortably? The answer to that question is fucking absolutely. Not even a question. It's not even a question. Do you, I just don't think, you know, sometimes people will do like this. They'll be like, here's an example of how big a billion is, to help people kind of contextualize how big a billion is. And they'll talk about how, you know, a million seconds is like 11 days or something. I don't know what it is. I think it's like 11 weeks or 11 days or something like that. And a billion seconds is 11 years, something like that. I don't actually know the actual math. I'll put a meme on the screen showing the actual math for those who are watching the video version of the podcast. But if a person makes a single billion, they make $1 billion in a year, and we tax them at 90%, if you can do basic math, simple math, you can do it on your calculator if it's too hard. What they are left with is $100 million net income. Now, I don't know if you know how much things cost in the world, just generally speaking, like what the cost of healthcare is, and what the cost of cars are, and what the cost of homes are, and what the cost, just what the general cost of living is. But $100 million is so much fucking money. It's the most money. It's if you ever get $100 million in your life, then you, that's it. You don't ever need to do anything ever again. If you ever make $50 million in your life, you can instantly retire and live incredibly lavishly for the rest of your life and have so much money left over for anyone you want to give it to when you die. If you got kids, you can give it to all your kids and they will be rich for their entire lives off of that if they know how to use it wisely and invest it wisely and allocate it wisely. If you don't have kids, you could give it to all your friends when you're dead and they could all live lavishly and give it to their families. $100 million is so much money. It's you can live in any house you want to live in, and you can have multiple houses in any city you want to live in. You can go on any vacation you want to go on and stay in the nicest hotel rooms and only eat at the best possible restaurants, the most expensive restaurants, only wearing the most expensive, finest clothes, driving the most expensive cars, flying in private jets. That's how much money $100 million is, and that's how much you would take home net in a single year if you made $1 billion in a year and we taxed you 90%. It's all relative, right? This guy just sees 50% tax in California, and he says, no, I can't get behind that. I can't get behind that. If I make that much money, I want that money. And here's why this guy is being a greedy maniac psychopath. Here's why the greed disease has infected this guy's mind, and he's wrong and I'm right. Is because even at $1.5 million, even if you manage to get a job that pays you $1.5 million, here's the reality. If you're a person who has a salary that is in the neighborhood of $1.5 million, I'm sorry to break this to you. Capitalism is inherently not meritocratic. You did not get that $1.5 million because you were just that much better than all of the other workers in the workforce, because you just outcompeted everybody that much. If you are getting paid over $1 million to do your job, you are getting paid too much. You are overpaid. You are paid significantly more than you need to survive. You are paid significantly more than you need to survive incredibly comfortably. You are paid significantly more than you need to live in a nice house, to drive a nice car, to eat good food, and to have good health care. You are taken care of if that is your yearly salary, and you're overpaid. Now, listen, people are paid what they're paid. Companies make the money that they make, and that money's got to go somewhere. You know, if professional sports is a multi-billion dollar a year industry, then that money's got to be distributed somewhere. So if people are paying $100, $200, $300 a ticket to go fill up stadiums and watch these people play sports, and they're buying jerseys and they're buying all this merch, and the team is generating all this revenue, yeah, I guess the starting quarterback can make $20 million a year, and the starting point guard can make $30 or $40 million a year, or whatever. Your star pitcher can make $50 or $60 or $70 million a year, because with baseball, it's out of control. The money's got to go somewhere, but that doesn't mean that it's fair. That doesn't mean that, like, you are actually worth $50 million a year, $60 million a year. That's the value that you're generating with your work, as compared to, like, somebody who works two or three jobs and pulls in $60 or $70,000 a year, and they're working 80 or 90 hours a week. You're not generating that much more value to society with your labor. You just aren't. But you are paid what you're paid, because capitalism is an inherently unfair system. It's an inherently unfair system that happens to be working out in your favor if you are that person. If you are a person who is getting paid over $1 million a year to do your job, then you are benefiting from this inherently unfair system. It's not weighted proportionally. It's not weighted fairly. It doesn't go, well, based on how hard you work and based on the value that you contribute to society and based on how much blood, sweat, and tears you put into your job performance, that's how much money you earn. That's not how it works. That's just not how anything works. So it's an inherently unfair system that doesn't work for a lot of people, for millions of people, and for a few lucky people. America's a country of 350 million people. I think we're talking about, like, maybe a million here who are clearing this kind of money. And that sounds like a lot of people, but it's relatively a very small percentage. They're lucky enough to be taking home enough money that they can be taxed 50% and still be living incredibly comfortably. So this is why this guy is a total greed monster. This is why his brain has been diluted by greed, is in the hypothetical reality where someday he's lucky enough to be winning the game of capitalism and making $5 million, $6 million a year, he's already preemptively sick at the idea of having the government take half of that money. He's already preemptively going, no, but I should even have more. I should be allowed to have more is the thing. I should eat, but that's not fair. That's not fair to me. Here's an analogy, and this is a bad analogy, but here's an analogy. It's like, let's say that you're winning a basketball game. You're two basketball teams facing off against each other, and your team is winning 300 to 10. That's the score, and it's the fourth quarter, and it's 300 to 10, and the NBA sees this, and they go, you know what, this is kind of ridiculous. We're going to change the score just so it feels a little bit better to 150 to 10, and they take away half your points. At the end of the game, you have still just, you've cleared the bar to win this game by just so more points than anyone has done in the history of the NBA, and you're upset because you feel like you should have been allowed to win 300 to 10 instead. You should have been allowed all those points. The reason why this is a bad analogy is because sports are, in their point system at least, actually, usually, typically, meritocratic. You get as many points as you earn. If you're able to get the ball in the hoop, you earn those points. You've earned those points by out-competing the people across from you. So to make this analogy better, where you win this basketball game 300 to 10, let's just say it's just like, it's not even because your team is better at shooting baskets than the other team. Let's just say that, like, for whatever reason, the team you're playing, every time they get the ball in the hoop, they get 0.001% of a point. And every time your team gets the ball in the hoop, you get 5 points. You're both playing this game, but for some reason, your team gets 5 points every time the ball goes in the hoop, and the other team gets 0.001% every time the ball goes in the hoop. And in that scenario, you've still somehow convinced yourself, yeah, but we are better. Like, even if the game wasn't rigged in our favor, we would still win the game. You've convinced yourself that, like, you are still winning on merit, and that's why you deserve all 300 of those points. You can't see that the game at its core is inherently rigged in your favor and working out for you, and you can't just be fucking grateful and just say, God, am I ever lucky to be on the team that the game is rigged for. And that's what you should be doing. If you are ever in the position where you are making $2 million a year, $3 million a year, $4 million a year, in the spirit of altruism, in the spirit of humility, in the spirit of understanding your circumstances, you should be happily giving away as much of that money as possible, understanding that you can afford to give away 60 or 70% of your wealth or 60 or 70% of your yearly income and still be winning the game handily, still be beating everybody else by a lot. And you should be grateful to be in that position. You know, when somebody like this guy, the rap Jesus, just sort of looks at the number and goes, you know, billionaires, they're taking care of like 40% of the tax burden. They're taking care of 40% of taxes. They should be taking care of at least 90% because they own 99% of the wealth. It's about relativity. They can afford to be fulfilling significant, the fact that there are like 14 people in the world, there's like 20 billionaires actually, who own more money, who collectively have more money than several hundred million people in the middle and working class. The fact that they have such a massively disproportionate amount of wealth. And you're like, well, they're covering 40%, and you're expecting everybody else to cover 60% is fucking insane. The bottom line is they should be covering 100% of the tax burden, and they can comfortably. They can do it and still be the richest motherfuckers on the planet. Elon Musk can have 95% of his yearly income taxed and still be one of the most insanely wealthy people to ever exist on the planet. So in no world can you just sort of carte blanche say 50% is too high. What you can say is, I don't know if I trust the government with that money. If they're going to take 50% of $95 billion, I don't know if I trust them to spend that responsibly. We can get back into that conversation. And that's a valid conversation that we can have. But if that's the argument you're making, you're sort of de facto making the argument that I don't trust the government with that money, but I do trust Elon Musk with that money. I do trust Jeff Bezos with that money. And all I would have to say to you in that circumstance is like, fucking why? What have they ever done to make you trust them with that money? As shady as the government can be with tax money and with the allocation of funds, as much embezzling as there is that absolutely goes on and skimming that absolutely goes on, and as much as that is a problem, the government is still putting money into things that we need. Like, not as much as we would like, but they are still doing it. They're still subsidizing low-income housing for millions of people. I think that the government could afford to put all unhoused people in government-subsidized housing. I think that one billionaire could afford to do it. I literally think that a single billionaire could afford to put all unhoused people in subsidized housing that they personally pay for. But the government at least is doing it somewhat. The government is doing somewhat of a good job of providing social programs with our tax revenue. So I've got to jump in here to talk about something that I forgot to mention when I did the initial recording for the podcast. If you're just listening to the audio version, this might just sound weird. It might just sound like a continuation of what you were just listening to. But if you're watching on YouTube, you can see that I have changed my clothes and it is the next day. I was in the middle of editing the episode and I realized, oh crap, I didn't say this very important thing, which is, this idea of taxing the highest tax bracket, 70, 80, 90%, it's not just this crazy progressive concept, this radical concept that I'm putting out there hypothetically. It's actually something we have very much so already done in this country, and it already worked. During the most economically prosperous era in American history, we were taxing the highest income income bracket at around 94%. So between about 1944 and 1963, the era that really kind of generated the wealth of the baby boomer generation, it was sort of the era of the recovery from the Great Depression, and there was a great economic recovery. We were taxing, on average, our highest earning tax bracket between 70 and 80%, with the top earners being taxed around 90%. And look, it's not that like the government was allocating the funds that they were collecting perfectly. Absolutely, during this time period, there was still for sure embezzling going on and skimming going on and, dividends, decimals being moved and millions of dollars being, disappearing here and there. But for the most part, the amount of tax revenue that we were able to collect as a country by properly taxing our highest earning tax bracket generated a lot of expendable budget for social welfare programs. We were able to build up a robust social welfare system that resulted in the majority of people, far more people in the country, having a higher level of financial security. They had a higher level of there was a stronger social safety net, and the economy thrived as a result. People were able to buy houses and afford basic needs, and they didn't have as much financial insecurity and financial fear over just like basic bills being paid. And it created generational wealth for that entire generation. And the income tax rate began to decline around 1964 and culminated in closer to what it has been for the last 40 years or so in around 1987 with the Reagan era. I mean, surprise, surprise, everything bad in the country begins with Ronald Reagan. But, that's when we started flipping the concept to actually let the richest people pay a smaller percentage in taxes. And if we just let them get really rich, it will trickle down. The funny thing about this era, too, when we were actually taxing our highest earning tax bracket at a much higher rate, is those people were significantly less wealthy than our highest earning tax bracket is today. So, and that's including, accounting for inflation as well. The highest earning tax bracket during this period between 1944 and like 1964, they were significantly less wealthy, even accounting for inflation, than Mark Zuckerberg or Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk. By orders of magnitude, these people were significantly less wealthy and were still having the government tax them at a significantly higher rate. And it resulted in a greater period of economic prosperity for everyone, for the country. The entire country did better as a result. So this is not just some pie in the sky hypothetical theory that I'm coming up with on the podcast. This is actually something that we have already done in history, and it already very much so worked. And somehow we've just been convinced and conditioned over the last four decades through years of conservative propaganda and capitalistic propaganda to believe that it's outlandish to tax rich people too much. They're like, hey, if a billionaire is paying you 10%, they're giving you $100 million. That's a lot of money. We've somehow drank the Kool-Aid on this lie, and we need to knock that off. Okay, back to the original thing that I recorded right now. I don't know. Personally, I think just selfishly, if I'm just going to be a little greedy boy down at the very, very bottom of the tax bracket, I'm going to say, if the government is spending the money irresponsibly anyway, I'd rather they take it from Elon Musk than me. Sorry. Period. And then the thing about the rap Jesus and this other guy who blocked me is they think, yeah, but you would change your mind if you were in his shoes. If the roles were reversed and all of a sudden you started making that kind of money, you'd want to keep it too. And that's what this guy was saying to me. He was like, if I ever make that kind of money, I better be allowed to keep it. And all I could think was like, you're a fucking maniac. You've allowed the disease of greed to completely contort and ruin your brain. Because no, if the roles were reversed, I would not be trying to figure out how to keep as much of my money as possible. If I was somehow in the position that I was making $95 billion a year, which is something it's so absurd I can't even conceive of it, the last thing I would be thinking is, how can I keep as much of this as possible? I would be thinking, I'm going to keep a billion and figure out how to get rid of the rest and figure out how to allocate the rest to making sure that homelessness is a thing of the past, to making sure that there are no kids who are going to school hungry, to making sure that everybody has affordable healthcare. I'm just going to take care of it. And so I don't think it's unreasonable for me to expect that of them, because they can do it. They can do it and still be richer than God. So yeah, that's why that person's wrong and I'm right. That's why that person's stupid and I'm smart. That's why that person's bad and I'm good. That's why that person's greedy and I'm very generous. Okay. But speaking of greed, okay. So I'm using this idea of like this poison, this disease to talk about Brian Thompson. So let's get into it. Let's talk a little bit about Brian Thompson. So as you no doubt have already heard, the CEO of United Healthcare was murdered on the street. He was assassinated outside of his hotel on a way to a shareholder meeting. A shareholder meeting that, by the way, they still held. I don't know if you guys have seen that great video from Alex Perlman that went massively viral. I love this guy, and we've met a couple times. He's a really, really funny guy, really nice guy, and a great political commentator, where he just talks about how, like, they still held the shareholder meeting. He goes on this big rant where he's like, they stepped over his body to have the shareholder meeting. His blood would, like, they stepped over his pooling blood to go and have their shareholder meeting. They could have easily been like, hey guys, let's hold off. Let's cancel the meeting and let's make sure this guy's family's okay. Nope. They still had their fucking meeting because that's how morally defunct these people actually are. But yeah, so this guy was assassinated by someone who carved into his bullets kind of his manifesto, which it very clearly points out that like this guy knew who he was shooting at and was shooting him for the reason we all think he was shooting him. Brian Thompson was the CEO of the most morally bankrupt healthcare company in America. If you don't know much about United Healthcare, United Healthcare denies more claims than any other private healthcare company in the country. They deny over a third or almost a third of every claim that comes to them. I don't think I can overstate how actually evil United Healthcare is as a company and how evil Brian Thompson is for making his personal fortune the way that he made it. Like, because what's happening right now on the internet is there's two interesting things happening because they're both bipartisan. One is we have bipartisan support for the shooter. We have people like Ben Shapiro and Matt Walsh going on the internet and saying, if you're celebrating the death of Brian Thompson, you're evil. And they're saying the left is celebrating the death of Brian Thompson. And this is why the left has no morals and the left is evil. People in their comments and Ben Shapiro's comments are saying, Ben, not a member of the left, an avid member of your fan base. And I also agree that Brian Thompson was an evil piece of shit who had, you know, had it coming. And there's a lot of, so there's bipartisan support for, you know, or I guess, you know, you could say bipartisan indifference to Brian Thompson's death. People on the right and the left seem to understand that the particular kind of greed that Brian Thompson represented and that his company represents is a societal evil. I have a theory on why that is. I think it's because those people have been, those conservative people who seem to get that have been personally affected by the evil of the healthcare industry's greed. They have personally had claims denied, and they have personally not been able to afford medications and procedures for themselves and loved ones. And since it personally affected them, they understand why it's a problem. It's kind of like Dick Cheney all of a sudden having the tiniest bit of empathy for queer people after his daughter came out. It's like, because it happened to me, I can now understand the issue. I can now understand how to treat people like human beings who deserve a basic level of dignity and respect. But I still don't think that they understand that this problem goes beyond just the healthcare industry, right? Like that this is the, like, this is like problem number one in late stage capitalism. And I'm pretty sure they don't understand it because they just voted to reelect Donald Trump, who is currently filling his cabinet with billionaires. There are 14 billionaires in the incoming administration. So I don't think that these people who seem to understand why it's like, it's fine that Brian Thompson's dead. I don't think that they understand the totality of the problem, the totality of the sickness and the stranglehold that greed has on America. Because again, these people, even though they may have been personally victimized by the healthcare industry, and they might now have a personal narrative that says, I would never do that. If I was ever in charge of a healthcare company, I would make sure that people could have the healthcare that they need. I would make sure that nobody dies because I refuse to pay out the policy that they already gave me money for. They probably have a personal narrative that goes something along the lines of that. But also, somehow, ridiculously, they're still carrying the personal narrative that, like, once I make my fortune, once I make my millions, I'm going to want a tax code that allows me to keep as much of that money as possible. I'm going to want politicians in power who are writing a tax code that allows me to keep as much of my money as possible. And they don't see the connection between those two things. They don't see a problem there. They only see a problem with what Brian Thompson did because they can actually see the blood on United Healthcare's hands. They can actually see how United Healthcare's policies for generating profits directly resulted in millions of people dying, resulted in people not being able to afford medicine or afford life-saving care. And they can see that, but they don't see the connection between that and, like, yeah, those same policies, that is reflected in the tax code by your billionaire president. He wants to create a tax code that favors him and his billionaire friends even more than the system already does, which is already too much. And the result of that is that, like, not only do regular people like you and I bear a larger and disproportionate portion of the tax burden, you know, according to the rap Jesus, we're nothing, we're clowns for the percentage that we pay. But it doesn't, it's relative, right? $10,000 is a lot of money to me. That's a lot of money, and I really feel that amount. But it's nothing to Elon Musk. The thing about Elon Musk is $11 billion is nothing. $11 billion. It's such a small amount of his personal net worth and of his total yearly income that it's effectively like if you or I were taxed 10 cents, it might as well be nothing, right? It can't scratch the bottom line. It can't even begin to affect his bottom line. And you can go all the way to 90% without touching that man's wealth, without touching his ability to be insanely comfortable and wealthy, and also altruistic and philanthropic. Even with making $9 billion a year, he could still be one of the world's leading philanthropists. He could be incredibly charitable with his leftover net income. And these people somehow don't see that connection. They can see how what Brian Thompson was doing with United Healthcare was wrong, but they can't see how, you know, letting billionaires just make more and more money exponentially and thinking that taxing people anything more than 15% is like, how dare the government? They can't make that connection. So yeah, I don't give those people a lot of credit, but that's the first thing that's going on that's bipartisan, is there seems to be like a bipartisan awareness that this is a class solidarity issue and not a left versus right issue. And that's somewhat encouraging, but I'm not super encouraged by it because I still don't think that those people get it. The other thing that's happening is there is bipartisan reprimanding going on right now when it comes to Brian Thompson's death. People on the left and the right are saying, I can't believe people are celebrating this. I can't believe people are cheering for this. Guys, there's never an excuse for this. It's never justified. He may have been a little greedy. He may have had policies that resulted in people dying so that he could make money. But come on, guys, please. We can't be cheering for this. And this is on the left and the right. This musician that I really respect, that I really like, who writes really beautiful folk songs, American folk songs, about the greed of capitalism and the corruption of capitalism and the problems of late-stage capitalism and the problems of American politics, from a decidedly progressive and leftist stance. His name is Wells, W-E-L-L-E-S. Writes these amazing songs where he'll just stand out in the woods and like sing a song and like with nothing else, but just him and his guitar and his voice, he delivers really beautiful, like Bob Dylan-esque, you know, kind of protest poetry. I saw this guy post on Threads, a post that said, no man's death is worth celebrating. No man. Can't think of a person ever in history who it would be worth celebrating if they die, who it would be a good thing for humanity if they died. It would send a good message for humanity. And I just like, first of all, everybody dies. Not everybody's death is felt equally. The people who are glazing for Brian Thompson, because listen, as I said, the game is inherently rigged, and it was rigged in his favor in life, and it still is in death. The NYPD is working exponentially harder to solve the Brian Thompson murder than they are on any of the other hundreds of murders that happen there every year. Every year. There are hundreds of unsolved murders in New York, and they're not putting nearly the resources or the manpower into solving those cases as they are going to continue to put into the Brian Thompson case. Because even in death, Brian Thompson is going to get a disproportionate amount of attention and a disproportionate amount of care, and that's just what his disproportionate wealth bought him. Is people care about his death a disproportionate amount. And the fact that like even Wells, with his leftist and progressive ideas and his songs, was like, come on, guys, don't celebrate this, made me go, oh, this kind of worship of white, Christian, straight, wealthy men is so insidious and has infected, it's a bipartisan problem. Because I have seen both people on the left and the right saying, hey, this is a tragedy. You know, there's no justification for this. And I want to be really clear about where I stand on it, because I'm not celebrating that someone was murdered. I personally am not a violent person. I'm lucky enough that life has not aggrieved me yet enough to the point where I have ever felt like I need to purchase a firearm to exact some kind of justice or vengeance. I literally consider myself lucky. Like, I have not had something happen where I'm like, oh, I actually might need to go get strapped and go seek some street justice for this wrong that was cut. You know, some people have some really gnarly shit happen to them where they're like, the cops aren't going to do anything about this. The government's not going to do anything about this. I'm going to go have to take matters into my own hands. I've been lucky enough that like, that's not my story. So it's easy for me to say, I'm not a violent guy. It's not in my nature. I don't solve my problems through violence. I don't really believe that violence can be cured as a societal ill by more violence. I'm anti-capital punishment. I don't believe that our punitive system for criminals that it works. I think that we focus too much on punishment and not enough on rehabilitation and rehumanization of the offenders. So I really want to make that clear that that's my position. Is like, I don't see someone getting murdered and I go, woohoo, immediately. All that being said, I am acutely aware that Brian Thompson was a violent person. that Brian Thompson's company, United Healthcare, was carrying out great acts of horrific violence on the American people in the name of profits. I genuinely believe that Brian Thompson and United Healthcare are evil, that what they do is evil. I'm not celebrating it necessarily, but I'm also not like lighting a candle and doing a vigil. You know what I mean? I don't know. I see all this hand wringing and I can't help but think of all of the different black people over the years, unarmed black people, black men and women that I've watched in body cam videos who are executed by the police. And there's a certain subset of the population who seems to care about that and wants to talk about it and wants to hold space for that and recognize these people who are murdered as their deaths as tragedies, myself included. You know, I think it's absolutely tragic that George Floyd was murdered in front of his community. I think it's tragic that Philando Castile, it's one of the most tragic ones I've ever, like, was murdered for no reason. I definitely understand having empathy for a murder victim, but it's wild that, like, some of the same exact people who are out here saying there's, you know, I've seen conservative people online, and I've seen people on the left saying there's no excuse, there's no justification for what happened to Brian Thompson. But those same people will tell you that George Floyd deserved to die because he had fentanyl in his system. I saw someone post somewhere that Brian Thompson has killed more people with his policies than any serial killer in American history. And I was like, that's gotta be true. Dahmer, you know, Bundy, BTK, these are rookie numbers. Zodiac, they couldn't hold a candle to what Brian Thompson has been able to do with United Healthcare. Just unimaginable evil that this man has wrought on the American public. And people are like, there's just no excuse. There's no excuse. He's a father. He's a husband and a father. Yeah, so is BTK. Like, Josh Powell was a husband and a father, and he murdered his wife and kids and then killed himself. Like, what, like, being a husband and a father does not inherently mean that you should be exempt from all consequences of your actions. Again, I'm not necessarily praising what happened to him, and I'm not necessarily encouraging other people to do the same. I'm not necessarily saying that we should be out here executing all of the CEOs, but I am saying, like, the fact that there are so many people hand-wringing over it and being like, wow, you guys have really lost the plot. I don't know, get the fuck out of here. This problem of America's, like, disease of greed has gone on for way too long. And it's been allowed to grow out of control, unchecked. And with the incoming administration, it's only going to get worse. Their wealth is only going to grow even more exponentially. And the wealth disparity, the gap, is going to grow even more. And people in lower tax brackets are going to pay an even more disproportionate percentage of their income in taxes, when it's all just completely unnecessary. Because here's the bottom line of all of it. If you're upset that people seem to not care that Brian Thompson is dead or seem to be celebrating, if that bothers you, here's what I'll say. All that guy had to do is be a decent human being, a halfway decent human being. And I'd be right there with you saying this is a tragedy and it should be thought of nothing else as a tragedy. I do feel sorry for his kids. They didn't ask to have their father be a evil psychopath, an evil greedy psychopath, but he represents everything that is wrong with society, genuinely, with humanity. He is the embodiment of the greatest ill that we face. All of our biggest existential problems, war, climate change, those are kind of the two huge ones, could be fixed if we could confront our problem with greed. The only reason we continue to soldier ahead the way that we do in the face of all of the evidence about climate change is because of greed, is because just handful of corporations just can't let go of their profits. They know, they've been presented with all the necessary information to know what they're doing, to know that there's no point in continuing to grow your corporation's profits exponentially because no one will be able to spend the money on a dead planet. They understand this. They understand that, like, it can't possibly be for, like, your progeny, right? It can't possibly be for your kids because your kids won't be able to spend this money. What is the point of stockpiling all of this insane wealth? And it's just that, like, it's just pure and simply their brains have been rotted by greed. It doesn't matter that it makes no logical sense to say, I don't care that what we're doing is killing the planet. I want more money. And it's the same exact thing as this person who told me, I don't care if I'm taking home $760,000 net after taxes, I want more. There's no logic to it. It's not logical. You're good with 760. Logically, you're more than good. But it's not a logical thing, greed. It doesn't obey any logical rules. I don't care. I want more. When it comes to Brian Thompson, if you're feeling bad that this happened to him, what I'm saying is all of these problems, all of these issues could be resolved by people just behaving decently. We would not have a budding class war and people constantly talking about revolution and eat the rich if the rich would just be decent people. If the billionaires of the world would just say, hey, we've all collectively got enough money to make sure that none of you even have to pay taxes. We've got enough money to make sure that everybody gets a free school lunch. We got enough money to make sure everybody gets affordable health care that's good. We've got enough money to make sure that we don't need to have unhoused people on the streets. We can build and maintain subsidized housing for all of these people. Collectively, we have more than enough to do that. And if they would just do that, then we wouldn't have any of these problems. So that's the problem. It's like you're pointing your frustration in the entirely wrong place when you look at people and say, hey, come on, guys, this is disgusting. We can't celebrate this. We can't. That's not who we are. We're dealing with unbelievable amounts of evil, unbelievable amounts of immorality. And what are we supposed to do? Just continue to just sort of shake our heads at it and go, oh man, I really wish they wouldn't. But we're not taking care of it. We just voted to not take care of it. We just voted to make the problem worse. If the police aren't going to do it, if the politicians aren't going to do it, if the voters aren't going to do it, who's going to do it? And you can't be surprised if every once in a while somebody gets popped in the back with a silencer and three golden bullets with a message inscribed on them. Sorry if that sounds like I'm losing the plot or like I'm going too far, but like those are my thoughts. Stop being so fucking greedy. If you're making enough, let it be enough. Just take your money and be grateful and be happy to give back. For God's sakes. That's the episode. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. It's the holidays. I've got so much music for sale. If you've got a person in your life who you're looking for a unique gift for them, get them my double vinyl. I unlike, you know, Brian Thompson or Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or anybody making $1 million a year or even several hundred thousand dollars a year, I do need as much financial support as I can possibly get. So check out my tunes. Check out my Patreon if you would like to support this show. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. And that's not me being greedy. That's literally me just trying to pay rent in my little one-bedroom apartment for another few months and keep these shows going because I like doing this. I think I think that the audience enjoys it. So if you can join us over there, we'd love to have you. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. Check out the Oneer podcast. It's my new podcast with my friend Kramer England. There's a playlist of the Oneer podcast here on this channel. I'll link it in the description. Also, this entire podcast is linked in the description here and in the playlist. I think that's everything. Okay. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.